Indiana has been wrestling with the regulation of alcohol since, well, before it became a state. In 1790, authorities in the Northwest Territory, which encompassed present-day Indiana, banned the sale of alcohol to soldiers and made it a crime to provide liquor to Native Americans. In the early 1800s, the territorial legislature passed laws to keep future Hoosiers from drinking on Sundays and to keep minors from consuming alcohol any day of the week. And by the time the 18th Amendment put the kibosh on the production, sale, and transport of liquor across the country, Indiana had experimented with a statewide prohibition not once, but twice, with the state's first ban predating federal prohibition by 65 years. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll take measure of the General Assembly's ongoing attempt to find just the right mix when it comes to beer, wine, and cocktails. The right mix of oversight by the government and consumer choice, that is. Now, over the years, Hoosier lawmakers have cleared the way for grocery stores to carry distilled spirits. They've given more latitude to Indiana-based wineries, microbreweries, and craft distillers. And they've lifted long-standing prohibitions against the sale of alcohol on Sundays, on Election Day, and the state fair. On the other hand, Indiana remains the only state in the nation to regulate alcohol based on beverage temperature. And as you might imagine, that's a point of contention. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Legislation concerning the sale of alcoholic beverages is a lot like that mystery shot your friend buys you right before last call. You have a pretty good idea how it'll taste and how it might affect you, but until you toss it back and wait a bit, you won't know for sure. And on occasion, you might encounter what could be described as unintended consequences. Here to talk about the consequences of recent regulatory reforms and efforts to improve them are Republican Representative Ethan Manning of Logansport, chair of the Indiana House Public Policy Committee, Melissa Coxey, executive director of the Indiana Retail Council, Jim Perucker, executive director of the Wine and Spirits Distributors of Indiana, and Lisa Hutchison, director of the Indiana Coalition to Reduce Underage Drinking. Thank you all for being here. Ethan Manning, let me start with you. You know, we were joking a minute ago. My first intersection with Indiana's liquor statutes came as an undergrad at IU when, on Sunday afternoons when people got thirsty, we'd essentially draw straws to see which of our 21-year-old friends,
I hope so.
Would go drive to the Illinois border or the Ohio border and bring that. So things have changed a lot. Are we better as a state, or have we moved backwards, would you say?
I think it's hard to tell when you talk about the alcohol space because, you know, in my role the last 6 months as public policy chairman, if I've learned one thing, it's that Indiana's unique, just like all the other 49 states. When you've seen one state's alcohol laws, you've seen one state. And so you have to keep into account a lot of things. We're always constantly making small changes due to changing consumer tastes and changes in the market overall. And so we're always doing those little changes. Sometimes we talk about bigger changes, which I think we might talk about today. We had a couple bills this session. But it's hard to say whether it's better or worse because there are a lot of factors to consider when we talk about things that Lisa talks about overall, the availability of alcohol, especially to folks who are underage, but then also, again, responding to the market and making sure that consumers can get what they want in a responsible manner.
And I guess it is sort of the classic, and there are other issues like this too, I suppose, but it's the inflated balloon you press here and it's going to push out somewhere else. And if it's, you know, whether it's your territory or your sales market share, if you're getting more, someone probably in that zero-sum game.
That's right. In some cases, and overall, it's not about deregulation, but I think in my role, I'm trying to find some consistency in regulations as well.
And we should, for historians in the group, I guess the reason we have 50 different versions is essentially in 1933, when the 21st Amendment was enacted and prohibition was rolled off, basically it's states, take it.
Do what you want.
Do what you want with it.
That's right.
I'll ask you the same question. I mean, Are we moving in the right direction as a state?
So, I mean, I think my answer is similar, right? I mean, it is, alcoholic beverages are a product that we agree need to be regulated. And so as we are looking at the nuances of how alcoholic beverage laws evolved in the state of Indiana, it's important to do so with a, you know, scalpel rather than a sledgehammer, right? So, I mean, any of these bills that we've discussed this session, we absolutely agree that the conversations should continue. they are just conversations that we think need to bring more parties to the table and require more time. Because even as our conversations evolved this session, we would, you know, look at one issue and then that would expose another one. And so I think those conversations just need to continue to happen.
And of course, the notion of a conversation back in 2017, there was a Blue Ribbon Task Force commissioned to look at sort of the business-to-consumer aspect. And then the following year, it was going to be this deep dive, the kind of conversation you're having on sort of the retail or the wholesale distribution aspect of it. Wasn't that enough?
Well, no, I think it would be naive to think that that's enough. I mean, this is an ever-evolving marketplace. I mean, products that were, you know, those conversations revolved around products like chilled beer. I don't know that anyone anticipated the popularity of new, you know, chilled, ready-to-drink cocktails and those types of things that have changed the way the marketplace looked. You know, the way craft beverages still seem to be exploding in the state of Indiana. I mean, those conversations obviously still need to take place.
I remember when there was one microbrewery in the state of Indiana in Broad Ripple, I think now a few hundred more than that, at least that are dues-paying members of their association. Jim Perucker, you've seen a lot over your time in and around the state house.
I'm old.
Well, I wouldn't be referring it to, I didn't say you were here for 1933 and the rollback of Prohibition. I'm giving you that concession. But, I mean, what do you think? I mean, what trajectory are we on as a state? Is it this sort of ongoing conversation that's appropriate, or do you think the more we talk about it, that the more we're pointing winners and losers?
Yeah, I think we are. The ongoing conversation is important, and I think the legislature has done a good job over the course of the last couple decades of looking at things. There's been a lot of pressure particularly by the craft industry to loosen everything up as they want to get into every aspect of selling at retail, at wholesale, and being able to taste and get around all the rules. So many of the crafts, one of the things the first reaction they have is to run to the legislature and try and get exempt from the law instead of trying to figure out how to make it work. And that's always a challenge and I always seem like the Grinch to the craft people, because I suggest that maybe there's a way within the confines of the law to figure out how to do it and not come up with those unintended consequences that you do. But as Melissa said, I think it's very important to look at the balance of on any particular issue of, you know, whether it's cold beer with retailers versus packaged liquor stores, or whether it's the issue that we were involved in this year that the beer wholesalers wanted to sell spirits based ready to drink cocktails, and doing those issues in just a vacuum, I think Melissa's absolutely right. It's very difficult to look at those and only deal with that. On the issue particular that I was talking about on the ready to drink, it brought into a number of other issues that, because of the way beer wholesalers are regulated that liquor wholesalers are not, that
you made that point a few times. You kind of slipped that in there every.
It changes. It changes a lot because it changes how retailers buy it. It changes, and ultimately has a big effect on the marketplace. It's not just who sells it. And as Representative Manning said, and you alluded to it, is a kind of a zero-sum game, that we're only going to sell so much of this every year. There's a little bit of an increase, probably due to the population that increases every year of alcohol, but we're all arguing over selling the same amount of alcohol. And so
and
these
that's
debates...
That's what makes the stakes so high in terms of that.
Yeah,
that
these debates
share.
Just become about who sells it.
I always used to say, you know, back when Sunday sales came about, that, you know, a lot of the debates seem to focus on moral issues, but if you really get, you know, peel back the layers of the onion, it's a different M word. It's market share more than morals, probably. Or money would be even a shorter cut to that. Lisa Hutchinson, now, is this sort of, are we frustrating you by talking about sort of the fine points of regulation? Are you of the mindset that maybe when I was when I was driving to the state line might have been better, or maybe even prior to 1933 was better? I mean, what's your take on this?
Well, I am usually a different voice all the time in committee. My overarching goal is to bring the public health and the mental health perspective to this issue. You know, we have to remember that alcohol is a drug, and it is regulated for a reason. And it is the most widely consumed drug by teens and adults in our state. It is the number one drug that people seek treatment for in our state. So I don't think it can be regulated like other products. I don't think it should be as available as toothpaste and bread and milk. And that's, you know, what we've tried to do when we are in committee and talking to legislators about regulation, just to keep the perspective that it is a drug that needs to remain regulated. We know that, for instance, 28% of college students binge drink. We have high rates of adult high-risk drinking in our state as well. So, you know, that is my goal. When we look at all of these issues, and I don't know, you know, I'm not into the weeds on all the wholesale and all of that. That's not really my focus. But overall, I think for our perspective, we just need to make sure we're remembering that it is a drug and it needs to be regulated and remain regulated. And because it does impact mental health, it does impact substance use disorder, and that's a big concern.
Has there been an appreciable difference, though, as we've relaxed as a state different sorts of and made less stringent these guys? I mean, is there a correlation between that and addiction rates, or I mean, or can you just, is it more just the sense that there's more availability, so it must be bad?
I mean, well, I would say, because research shows the more availability there is, the more likely you are to have increases in underage drinking and adult high-risk drinking, which I think we forget a lot about adults because, you know, I focus a lot on underage drinking because that's my job, but we do forget about adults and high-risk drinking as well. And if you look at the rates in our state, they aren't dropping. They are, in some instances, increasing. So, you know, controlling that availability, the outlet density, you know, with that's one reason why we were concerned about the salon permit language earlier, because that would have added thousands of outlets to an already overtaxed Indiana State Excise Police.
Just let me add a footnote for, again, those that don't follow this, that you're referring to legislation that would have opened the door to beauty parlors, salons, to provide alcoholic beverages. And I think they're about, the figure I saw attached to it was about 8,000 additional. But, and it's not happening this session. So, But that's not to say it might not come back.
A lot of people were disappointed that's not happening.
Oh, they had already booked their next hairdo appointment.
I heard from a lot of ladies who were very interested in that idea.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about barbershops, but that's
they were included.
Okay, all right. Well, then I'm glad we're not discriminating in that regard. Ethan Manning, let me. You alluded to this earlier about some of the things that you wanted, that you'd like to see happen this session. You had legislation that you had authored, and now certainly as a conferee on this, you've been more than a sideline presence in terms of shaping what we're going to end up with. What's the takeaway this session? What can we tell Hoosiers that in this arena of alcohol regulation, we're better off than you were before because?
Sure. So one of the big topics we addressed this session was designated outdoor refreshment areas. So this is an idea that's been around for a number of years. It hasn't made it past the finish line. This session it will. I think there were six bills filed between the chambers with this idea this year. So ultimately what we've ended up with is Senate Bill 20. So that provides a lot of local control. Cities and towns can create certain areas. They have to be defined where they can allow essentially open carry of alcohol within that area. There has to be a designated permittee, so a retailer or a craft retailer right there. And so what we're allowing is festivals and things like this to happen, but it could be all the time. The local municipality gets to decide when and where that happens. And so we've worked with our cities and towns, with our Alcohol and Tobacco Commission to make sure that that really works for everybody. I think it's a great opportunity as we see historic districts and restaurant districts and things pop up around the state. This can be a good driver for growth for folks in those areas.
And I presume a concession to those who would be concerned about some sort of perceived bad influence. There was, and I haven't seen what the conference committee report is, but a 200-foot buffer essentially from schools and churches, unless the school or church is enthusiastic,
is okay
which
with,
some I
right.
presume would be.
And that's an
about
existing law,
the,
so we just made sure the DORAs conform with that existing procedure.
Yeah. And I'm guessing from a retail council standpoint, you don't have a dog in the I mean, it doesn't affect your folks one way or the other, but I'm guessing, Lisa,
certainly
it does
not
alarm you. I mean, what's the problem with this, if there is one?
We had some concerns about the provisions in the DORA. I wish there would have been stronger regulations from a state perspective, because not every community may see the value of wristbands or other enforcement activities. So we had hoped that that would have been put in at the state level. But I guess we'll see how communities handle that and if there are any issues. But I would hope that the retailers would be responsible and checking ID and make sure they're not over-serving people.
And I would guess, Jim, just as this was not necessarily a fight that Melissa is fighting,
it wasn't on our forefront. But I would just add that you know, what we're seeing here in Indianapolis, I know there's been a lot of press coverage about a couple of bars that have been on the radar screen of the community trying to get them shut down, and they finally got them shut down recently. That problem bars where there've been multiple police runs and all kinds of issues, and you know, I think that's a real life example of what we see when we are becoming lax in how we regulate the product, when we don't take a vigilant look at either you know, holding these people that own these facilities to a higher standard and making sure that they do the right thing, you know, because it is a socially sensitive product and it's regulated for a reason. It's the only product in the country, the only product in the world that has its own amendment to the United States Constitution, and it's because of just that problem. It was horribly abused prior to Prohibition. And it led to Prohibition because of the abuse.
We used to say that the press and media were the only ones with an amendment, First Amendment. But I guess now we'll have to quibble over that. Okay, you didn't care about the last issue. But there's another provision in the report that I'm guessing you will. And that has to do with grocery stores and big box retailers and other, including some of your members, who sell chilled, cooled, I guess what is the term, ready-to-drink, mixed drinks, cocktails, hard seltzers, hard ciders. I guess I could refer to it as things that my daughter likes. That's sort of the shorthand for that. Are you troubled? Because if this goes through, you can't do that. Your members can't do that. You're smiling still, so what's...
Well, I mean, yes, obviously it is an issue that we have opposed. But like I said earlier, you know, we've really appreciated the conversations around this issue. You know, our membership believes that we have sold this product safely and effectively for a very long time. We don't understand the policy reason for it, but that's why, again, we feel like we need to go back to having more fulsome conversations about the issue moving forward.
In the short term, yeah. Your membership has, well, not that they have a choice, but mm-hmm. will readily acquiesce, and you will no longer find those the White Claws and the Trulies and whatnot in the grocery store aisles, cool, that is.
Our members will follow the law, whatever that is. Yeah.
If I could talk about that.
Yeah,
John.
Please do.
The reason this came up this session, because I believe at best it's a gray area in the law, whether big box stores are currently allowed to sell chilled spirits is what we're talking about here, because these are spirits-based products, these new RTDs, things that really didn't exist until a few years ago. And so I think some retailers are just sort of testing the boundaries here, and so that's why I thought it was important for the legislature to contemplate this. To me, it's totally inconsistent to allow only cold beer in a packaged liquor store, but allow cold spirits to be sold in any big box store, of course, where people under 21 can be. So the other thing that was included in that bill that gets left out of a lot of the conversation is we also included curbside delivery for the big box retailers, so that when people are ordering their groceries, they can also get alcohol delivered to their car when they do that. And so, again, when we talk about balance, that's what we attempted to do there. And we'll continue.
And some of that was hastened by COVID, the pandemic,
right.
by a
that
lot of the notion of curbside,
COVID.
Which they right. were sort of emergency measures, which later right. were embraced and implemented. Mm-hmm. Lisa, problematic?
We have never been a huge fan of all the permanent changes that happened after COVID. I mean, I personally don't think that there need to be emergency orders for me to be able to get a margarita to go, which was actually happening. They were not supposed to be pre-mixed, but that was happening. So, you know, curbside delivery, you know, we have concerns about who's delivering. Is it the 18-year-old who works, who's monitoring that 18-year-old. Again, you know, I hope that retailers are going to be responsible in training their employees to deliver that and make sure it's not getting into the wrong hands. But, you know, in terms of the ready-to-drink, our concern is the alcohol content of a lot of those is much higher than a standard beverage, and we know that a lot of minors, particularly on college campuses, drink those. So, again, you know, it goes back to the access and availability, and we seem to be increasing that every session.
You know, a lot of people have couched or framed the whole, and this is, goes back sessions, the notion of cold versus warm. It's about public safety, we hear about drunken driving and so forth. But, of course, you can get cold beverages at package stores. You can't get cold pop or other mixers or water, but you can't. Okay, I'm tracking with this. Jim, is this really about public safety, or is it just, well, it goes back to market share I was talking about before.
Well, I think it's both. I mean, I think, again, I think you've got a set of rules that everybody has grown up under, and that the business model has been created by, and the values of their businesses have been understood with, and any change to that in any context, I think, is going to be looked upon negatively from that business owner. But there's also a public safety. There's also consumer access. I mean, you know, the debate in packaged liquor stores versus big box stores, they're different. They're different animals. They are, and there's a set of rules for what packaged liquor stores sell, and there's a set of rules for what big box stores sell. And I, you know, how that is delineated is, you know, that's what Representative Manning gets paid the big bucks to work out, and you know, they are both great customers of ours, so we're not going to get in the middle of it. But there's benefit to both, and you know, much like a packaged liquor store is not going to sell a tennis shoes or lettuce. But they're going to have a wide variety of craft beers and maybe that obscure scotch that you wouldn't find someplace else. So there are gives and takes in the whole marketplace that I think are important to look at in addition to the economics of it and public safety aspects.
You know, you're not accounting for that new lettuce-infused malt beverage that I hear.
It's coming now.
The next big thing. At least that's what I invested in. That's what the broker told me. Ethan Manning, another thing that had seemed to be, it sparked conversation, let's put it that way. Probably will not happen this session unless it's somehow in the budget. But that is exclusivity. Beer distributors right now, and this reminds me of the phrase beer baron, which, you know, I grew up with. People talk about beer baron, and other sectors of the industry don't have that exclusivity. Is there going to be an appetite at some point to level the playing field in that regard too, or is it the better, or perhaps more palatable for some of your colleagues to just say we level it by backing away altogether in terms of regulation?
Sure. Well, that'll certainly be an ongoing conversation. You know, we'll be back in 8 months for the 2024 legislative session, if you can believe it. But we did have House Bill 1544 this year, authored by Representative Jeter. And what that did, as amended, because we heard a lot of testimony, including from Mr. Perucker in our committee, but the bill ultimately passed the House 77-21. So not all that controversial at the end of the day on the House side. But what the bill did is allowed these new beverages, we defined them as mixed beverages, the White Claws, the Trulies, these things that are spirits-based, and we placed them under a wine wholesaler license. So in Indiana, we're the only state in the nation where you can't have a liquor, beer, and wine wholesaler license. You can only have beer or liquor, and both can have wine. So all we did was we put those mixed beverages in the center, so both beer wholesalers and liquor wholesalers can distribute those beverages. We defined what those were. And so pretty narrow bill, just to allow essentially what the beer wholesalers would like to do is Anheuser-Busch and some of these larger beer suppliers are coming out with these ready-to-drinks that are not beer-based, and they'd like to be able to sell the products that their parent companies are producing now.
And what your narrow bill is Jim Perucker's freight train barreling down the tracks at. Why was it problematic for you?
Well, it's a couple of reasons. One, as I said earlier, beer wholesalers have a whole different set of rules. We as spirit wholesalers in a regulated marketplace, the relationship between us and our suppliers is a totally free enterprise model. Our suppliers hire us, sometimes with a handshake, sometimes with a contract, but we get as little as zero notice, or if they're friendly, 30 days notice of a change. Beer wholesalers, on the other hand, have franchise protection that's ensconced in state law that says that a brand, Anheuser-Busch or Miller Coors, can never leave that wholesaler. So, I mean, it is set up, and there's such a set of rules that it is nearly impossible for a beer wholesaler to lose a brand. In addition to that, they have exclusive territories. So what these products that, and it is not just the Anheuser-Busch developing its own products. They are doing that, but for example, one of my members started selling Cutwater spirits, and it was a spirits company. Anheuser-Busch bought them.
And just wait, and PepsiCo hasn't even come into this market yet with its Blue Cloud. They already have a distribution.
Putting under a wine license, make sure they're on a level playing field between the beer and liquor wholesalers. There would be no franchise protection or territories on these mixed beverages. It's level playing field with competition.
All right, I'm hearing last call, unfortunately, and I don't want to violate any alcohol beverage act. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, I guess is what they say. Thank you, though, for being here and sharing your insights and, Jim, your passion on this issue as well. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Ethan Manning of Logan Support, Melissa Coxey of the Indiana Retail Council, Jim Perucker of the Wine and Spirits Distributors of Indiana, and Lisa Hutchison of the Indiana Coalition to Reduce Underage Drinking. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. You know, Ed, I get the sense if when we have this conversation in a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, if we're, you know, fate willing, are we going to still be talking about how to tweak alcohol regulation in this state?
Well, you and I have been talking about it on this show for 25 years now. Yeah, and in the 5 decades that we've been around covering this, you know, it's been the most heated issue, I think, you know, every few years. You know, we started out with the Beer Baron bill, and that was so contentious. And it just seems like this is something where you can never quite, you know, zip up all those little loopholes. You know, we seem to be finding that something new comes up each time. It was the Rickers convenience stores a few years ago with, oh, well, you know, we're really restaurants. We can sell alcohol. And, you know, now it's the cocktails, the mixed cocktails in the cans. And, you know, we had the cold beverages. What will it be next time?
And, again, where is this... Do we see regulation? Is that the one constant, or will we get to the point that let's just level the playing field by backing away?
No, absolutely you will have to see regulation because of the nature of the product. But what we need to see, what we're going to probably see sometime in the next 5 years, is a step back and having people say, okay, let's have everybody come to the table and come up with a kind of comprehensive way to regulate things, and let's look at this so that there's consistency across all sectors, and we'll go from there.
Before I let you go, budget compromise. Any surprises there?
Well, I was wrong. There was no iLottery in there, and I think that just gives Representative Manning, as chair of the Public Policy Committee, a little bit more leverage on some of the gaming bills next session.
Very good. You don't have to be right 100% of the time. 99% will work. Ed, thanks as always for your insight.
Thank you, John.
The 2023 General Assembly is now history. As the dust settles, we'll sit down with caucus leadership to assess what it means for you. On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of analyst Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.